The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed. Shop now for a limited time. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
December 6th of 2025, the Big Ten Championship game, Ohio State versus Oregon in Indianapolis. Spencer and Monique Tepe made the drive from Columbus to watch it. It was a big thing and a normal thing for that young couple, both Ohio State grads, both deeply rooted in that world. But somewhere around halftime, Monique left. She went back to the hotel. And according to court documents unsealed after the arrest, Spencer later told friends she was upset about something involving her ex-husband. An ex-husband from 8 years ago. Enough to ruin the day. It's a big deal. We're also learning that same day, while the Tepes were 180 miles away, surveillance cameras allegedly captured Michael David McKee at their property, the home they built together, the home where their two children slept, the home where 3 weeks later both of them would be found shot to death. Here's a question. Did Monique know? Did she sense even then that something was closing in? And if she did, why didn't she say anything? Why didn't she call someone? Why didn't police know that something was up with her ex? What did she know, I guess, is the biggest question. Because it's easy for us to jump to this conclusion that, oh, she knew he broke into the house. We don't know that part. We don't know if he broke into the house. We don't know if he was just technically on the property. The phrasing that was used in the affidavit leaves a little to the little to be desired in terms of conclusiveness on exactly what happened. The verbiage basically means he could have been at the property, meaning like, on the sidewalk all the way to in the house. It's not exactly clear yet what went on. But he allegedly was there for a couple hours at the property. I don't know if he was just hanging out outside, walking. I don't know. We don't know. We don't know what she knew either. But she knew something. Something that made her upset enough to leave that game. So what do you do? I want to be very clear about what this conversation is and what it isn't. This is not victim blaming. Monique Tepe didn't cause her own death. Michael McKee allegedly did. He's the one sitting in the Franklin County Jail right now facing aggravated murder charges. He's the one who, according to prosecutors, allegedly drove from Illinois to Ohio with stolen plates, entered that home sometime before dawn and shot two people while their children slept nearby. That's on him. All of it. But there's a harder conversation underneath all of us, one that matters for anyone listening who has ever had an ex who wouldn't let go, who has never, ever felt, or who has ever felt watched, who has ever wondered if they were overreacting or being paranoid. The question isn't whether Monique deserved what happened. She didn't. The question is whether anything could have stopped it, and if so, what? Because understanding that gap between knowing something is wrong and being able to do anything about it might be the only useful thing that comes out of this tragedy. So if we're going to find something out of this other than gawking at crime porn, let's try and find something useful, okay? Let's try and find the lesson out of this horrible, horrible story. Because there's a lot of people who find themselves in this exact same situation, in this exact same moment, and have no idea what to do, just like Monique did it. Because there really isn't a true right answer. There's no, just do this and your problems will be solved. Every situation is different. Every case is different. It's easy for us on the sideline here to go, well, she should have called police. She should have notified somebody. Yeah, maybe in hindsight she should have. But she was also sitting there probably weighing, if I do that, and he's already on edge, and if she knew that he was at their property, I mean, just the fact that he was there, that he had the gall to do that, that he had the will to do that, the lack of decency or common sense, what's appropriate, what's not, the lengths to which one person will go if they're showing up at your house 8 years after you've gotten a divorce from them at random and they've threatened you, it pretty much tells you they're going to do whatever the hell they want, whether you have the police there or not. And you know damn well calling 911 is not going to get you a 24/7 bodyguard. So what do you do? What would you do if you were faced with this? It's actually a poll question I have up right now on our Substack, hiddenkillers.substack.com. What would you do if a friend came to you just like this, just like Monique, and said, hey, here's what's going on. What do you think? What should I do? I need help. I need advice. Tell me your thoughts on what you would do to that exact scenario in the poll on our Substack, hiddenkillers.substack.com. The link is in the description. Let's talk about what Monique knew. According to the unsealed affidavit, friends and family told investigators plenty. They said McKee was abusive during their short marriage. According to court documents, at least one witness told detectives that McKee allegedly strangled Monique and forced unwanted S on her during the marriage. Yes, I hate having to talk like we're dressing fourth graders, but it's YouTube. And yeah. That he threatened her life. Not once, not vaguely, but specifically. One witness told detectives that McKee told Monique he could kill her at any time, that he would find her and buy the house right next to her, that she will always be his wife. See, there's someone who listened to way too many 1980s love songs, which seem to be a lot about stalking the ones you love and showing them their wrongs and why you should be with them after all. I mean, look, we would end this in another video. It kind of seems to be the ongoing thing. And one that allegedly Michael McKee lived by. Love to see that playlist, wouldn't you? There you go. Can you Can you predict a killer by their playlist? That'd be an interesting topic of conversation, wouldn't it? These aren't ambiguous statements. These aren't things you misinterpret. This is a man allegedly telling a woman in plain language that he owns her and he can end her life whenever he chooses. And this was years ago, during or shortly after a marriage that lasted roughly 7 months before she filed for divorce in 2017. Monique moved on. She met Spencer. They got married in December of 2020. They had two kids. They built a life in Wineland Park, a neighborhood on the north side of Columbus, and by all accounts, they were happy. Spencer was a dentist, well-liked at his practice, involved in mentoring kids through Big Brothers and Big Sisters. Monique had worked at Nationwide, earned her degree from Ohio State, was raising a young family. They were doing all the things you're supposed to do, and according to court documents, Michael McKee allegedly never stopped watching. Investigators found that a silver SUV linked to McKee was captured on surveillance cameras near the Tepe home repeatedly in the weeks before December 30th. At different times, that SUV was displaying stolen Ohio plates and Arizona plates. Detectives traced the vehicle back to addresses associated with McKee, a former home in Rockford, Illinois, and a hospital where he worked. This wasn't a coincidence. This wasn't a one-time drive-by, according to the affidavit. This was quite a pattern that allegedly culminated in murder. So here's where it gets complicated. If Monique saw any of this, if she noticed the SUV, if she sensed she was being followed, December 6th confirmed something she'd been afraid of for years. Why didn't she call the police? Why didn't she file a report? Why didn't she get a protection order? The answer isn't as simple as she should have done more. Because anyone who has actually dealt with stalking or domestic violence knows the system doesn't work the way people think it does. Let's talk about what Ohio law actually requires, all right? Because this is a state-by-state thing. So if you're sitting there in your state going, well, I know somebody who did this over here and it worked. It ain't that easy. Sorry, it's not. The world goes beyond your bubble. Menacing by stalking under Ohio Revised Code 2903.211 requires that a pattern of conduct that causes mental distress or makes someone believe they're going to be physically harmed. A single incident, even trespassing on someone's property, often doesn't meet that threshold. And we don't know if there was anything else that was going on. And it doesn't actually, well, you said those things to her in their marriage 8 years ago. Yeah, it was 8 years ago. And police aren't going to be getting you that order because he said some things to you 8 years ago during that marriage. It was 8 years ago. Police need documented patterns, multiple incidents, saved communications, witness statements, dates, times, evidence. Now, some may go, oh, that's a long list of stuff. Yeah, it does, but it also prevents people from filing erroneous claims, too, and just putting a restraining order on someone to control them when they've done absolutely nothing wrong, and it's actually being weaponized by someone who wants to control another human being, which happens. So you can't just go make claims against someone without the evidence. There's a reason for it. So imagine Monique had called police on December 6th. My ex-husband was on my property while I was out of town. I saw him on security camera. What happens? Best case, officers take a report. Maybe they try to contact McKee, issue a warning. But without prior documented incidents, without a trail of reports showing escalating behavior, there's no arrest. There's no automatic protection order. There's a piece of paper that says she called, and that's about it. But it's good to have that. It's a starting point. And a first-time report is always going to be just that, a first-time report. You're not going to ever get to actual orders of protection unless you start somewhere. So if you're starting at the 10th attempt, at the 10th time, and I'm not saying she did or didn't, I'm just saying for anyone out there, if it's like the 10th time they're doing it and you're finally reporting it, the police are seeing it as the first time. Unless you can back that up because you just sang out loud, well, he just done it 10 times. Great, prove it. If you can't prove it, guess what? There's time one. This isn't rocket science. And it's not anything that one should necessarily expect police to just believe you at your word either because you're who you are. The law is there to protect everyone. It's there to protect people from stalkers, again, when used correctly. And it only can do so much. Again, it's not a 24/7 bodyguard service you're hiring. If you want that, you can pay for it. And most people can't. Again, it's what makes this situation so cumbersome. It's also there to protect people from nefarious people who are going to weaponize it to kick them out of events, so to speak, to kick them out of places they would already go, to make life just difficult for them just to live and do their job. I've seen this done. I've seen monsters get restraining orders against people in some states that have very lax laws. So they couldn't go to a convention because they work in the same damn industry. It's insane. I mean, it's insane what people will do with this law. It can be weaponized. I've seen it used many other ways too. But nefarious people will use it to weaponize. And innocent people will use it to protect. The law isn't exactly great at making a distinction between how it's being used or who's using it. And officers don't have all day to learn your TikTok history and figure out exactly where you're coming from on the issue. The piece of paper says this, they're going to go with that. They got 50 other calls after yours. So, how that should be adjusted, I don't know. It needs to be utilized first. Again, it's not victim blaming. She may have filed something, and we just don't know about it. That is a real possibility, too. But you also are facing that very, very harsh reality that if someone is capable of doing this and they're already demonstrating it, in that moment, the last thing you may want to do, and I'm not saying this is the right thing to do, but I'm saying I get where she was coming from, is stir that pot more. Because that person's one stir away from boiling over. The reality is they're going to boil over whether you stir that pot or not. It's more so a matter of where you're going to be when the boil over happens and how much protection you have between that stuff coming out of the pot and where you are located. Civil protection orders require a hearing. You have to go to court. In most cases, present evidence, explain why you're afraid. And even if you get one, even if a judge signs a document that says this person can't come within 500 feet of you, a piece of paper doesn't stop someone who's already decided to kill you. A protection order is a legal tool. It's not a force field. McKee wasn't some impulsive hothead who might be scared off by a warning. He was a surgeon, a man who'd navigated medical licensing in multiple states, who's completed a vascular surgery fellowship, who knew how to present well in a professional setting. And according to court documents, he also knew how to disappear when he wanted to. Process servers trying to serve him with a malpractice paper couldn't even find him. One affidavit describes going to his Las Vegas residence multiple times with no answer. The TV turned off when they knocked. A neighbor said she didn't know him. He was a ghost when he wanted to be and was pretty good at being one. That's the gap we're talking about. The gap between a woman knowing she's in danger and the system being able to do anything about it. Stalking victims often have to wait until something happens, until there's a physical assault, until there's a break-in, until there's something the system can point to and say, now we can act, and by then the something can be fatal. But it's not just the system. There's psychology involved, too, and this is where it gets painful to talk about because it requires acknowledging something most people don't want to admit. Many victims downplay threats. Not because they're naive, but because the alternative is unbearable. You have to live. You have to go on about your life. And if you're sitting there in the corner, huddled up in the fetal position, going, oh, my God, they're going to get me someday. That's no way to live. But utter and pure ignorance to the risks is also not necessarily the way to go about life. And it doesn't sound like that's how Monique lived. It sounds like Monique was pretty well aware of the risks and was dealing with the world the way she best thought possible. So that's not an indictment on Monique or the way she was handling this. Know that. But I do know folks who do handle situations like this. Excuse me, allergies. But and folks who literally live in both realms. You probably do too. Ones who almost like they're literally right there, one step away, or are living in the fetal position. Letting life pass them by and the world pass them by, living in fear and not trying to take control of their own lives. And then you have ones where there are credible, real threats right there in the ether. And they live without a care. I think there's a healthy medium somewhere in there. But life is never going to be 1,000%. And life is never 1,000%, just the cakewalk. One would hope it is. But it's really not going to be as long as you have an active stalker or an active threat like that going on about it. And that's reality. It's accepting reality on reality's terms and reacting appropriately. And think about it, to fully accept that your ex-husband, someone you once loved, someone you built a life with, however briefly, wants to kill you, that's not a thought most people can hold for very long. So you rationalize. He's just having a hard time. He'll move on eventually. If I ignore it, maybe it stops. You tell yourself the story that lets you keep functioning, keep working, keep raising your kids. Monique had rebuilt her entire life. She had a new husband, a new home, two children under five. Acknowledging that McKee was still a threat meant admitting that her past wasn't really past. That the man she divorced in 2017 was still, 8 years later, allegedly circling her like a shark. That is terrifying to accept. And denial in that context isn't weakness, it's survival. It's the mind processing and protecting itself from a truth that is too heavy to carry. There's also fear of escalation. This is one of the most documented phenomena in domestic violence research. Victims often know their abusers better than anyone else, and they know what might set them off. Calling the police doesn't always make things better. Sometimes it makes things worse. Sometimes the abuser sees it as betrayal, an escalation, and a reason to act. The calculus becomes, is calling the police going to make me safer, or is it going to trigger the very thing I'm afraid of? And then, of course, there's shame. Especially for someone like Monique, educated, professional, married to a well-respected dentist, raising a young family, admitting you're being stalked by your ex can feel like admitting you made a mistake, that your judgment failed. Society still carries this implicit undertone of, why did you marry him in the first place? And so do a lot of ignorant comments out there in the ether. You see him, you're like, what's wrong with you? You've never really lived your life, have you? You just like to comment on others because you're coming from a place of pure fucking ignorance. If victims should have seen it coming, if love doesn't blind all of us sometimes. Or as if love doesn't blind all of us sometimes. You know? Should have just known to begin with. We made better choices. It'd be better. Yeah. That should always be the goal, to make better choices. But you know what? You start somewhere. And in your early 20s, you ain't making good ones. That's everybody. There's also the documentation trap. To get meaningful legal protection, you need evidence. But building evidence means engaging with the threat. It means saving messages instead of deleting them, photographing vehicles instead of looking away, filing reports instead of hoping it goes away. It turns you into the case manager of your own potential murder. And many victims just want to move on. They don't want to spend their lives cataloging their fear. And I get it. But again, dealing with reality on reality's terms, these are all of the things. These are all of the options of what's out there. And the option of putting your head in the sand, well, it's an option. It is an option. And you got kids here too. A 4-year-old, a 1-year-old. Reporting creates more chaos. Police showing up at your door, court dates, testimony, explaining to your children why mommy is scared. The instinct to shield your kids from trauma can override the instinct to protect yourself. You tell yourself you'll deal with it later. You tell yourself it's not that bad yet. And look, in the case of the Tepes, they had every reason to really not feel this on a regular basis, as far as we know. That maybe his head rose out of the sand every now and then, and like whack-a-mole, it's like, okay, or it just kind of goes away, and you're like, oh, it's a weird guy. Maybe he'll move on sometime. You don't think it's going to go this far. You don't want to think it's going to go this far. So what could have actually been done? Let's be honest about it. If Monique had reported the December 6th incident, McKee allegedly on her property while she was away, it would have been a misdemeanor trespassing charge at best, unlikely to result in jail time for a first offense, maybe a temporary probation order. Keep in mind, it's a different state that he's coming from, so you got that too. But McKee was based in Illinois at the time, possibly Nevada before that. Enforcement across state lines gets complicated fast. A police report would have created a paper trail, yes, but paper trails don't stop people who've already made up their minds. If she had documented the full pattern, every drive-by, every creepy message, every threat friends remember mentioning. Again, it very much depends how long ago that was. If it was 8 years ago, it meant nothing. I mean, it meant something then, but it wouldn't mean a lot today. If any of that existed in recent time, there might have been grounds for felony stalking charges. With enough evidence, a court could have issued an anti-stalking order with real teeth, but could have assumes McKee would have complied. And everything in his alleged behavior suggests he wouldn't have. According to the affidavit, McKee allegedly drove from Illinois to Columbus with stolen license plates. His cell phone reportedly showed no activity from December 29th until after noon on December 30th, consistent with someone who knew how to go dark. He allegedly entered the Tepe home sometime around 4 a.m., shot them both, and drove back. That level of alleged premeditation isn't stopped by restraining orders. That level of obsession isn't deterred by legal paperwork. The harsh truth is sometimes doing everything right isn't enough. The system isn't built to stop someone who has decided calmly and deliberately that they're going to kill. It's built to respond after the fact. It's built to prosecute, not prevent. So let's all stop pretending that it does the latter. It might have actually helped if someone, a friend, a family member, a colleague, had flagged McKee's alleged pattern to law enforcement as a credible escalating threat. If the medical licensing system had caught his pattern of evasion and instability, the way the alleged he allegedly dodged process servers, the way his Nevada license expired, the way he bounced between states, if there were protective threat assessment programs that intervened before violence, the way some workplaces and universities have started to develop. But again, what do you do here? He didn't have violence in the workplace. He had alleged malpractice in the workplace. And then he disappeared. Even if they found him, when they did, you're served. That's it. It's not like a psychological evaluation into his stability. None of that existed in this case. And so we're left with what we have. Two people dead, two children orphaned, a man in custody who allegedly spent 8 years refusing to let go. If you're listening to this and it sounds familiar, if you have an ex who won't let go, if you felt watched, if someone has made threats you've tried to convince yourself weren't serious, I want to speak directly to you for a moment. You're not crazy. You're not overreacting. The voice in your head telling you something is wrong, trust it. You don't need to have enough evidence to reach out for help. You don't need to wait until something happens. Document everything. And don't go, oh, I will. No. I mean, like right now, if you're not already doing it, if you already have that log on your phone that you can easily go to at this exact second, you're not like, oh, maybe I should create that. No. Create it if it isn't there already. Have it ready for you. Put every barrier down that prevents you from doing what you need to do. Documenting the icky shit in your life, the people in your life, the person in your life that needs to be documented. It doesn't feel good. It's like you just kind of want to move on and get on to the next thing. Do it. Document it. Everything. Dates, time, screenshots, photos, witnesses. Even if it feels pointless, even if nothing comes of it immediately, you're building a record that might matter. Tell people, friends, family, coworkers, create a network of people who know what's happening, who can watch for warning signs, who can verify your concerns. You're not just doing that to feel good. I think that's what a lot of people use it for, and they're completely missing the purpose. You're doing that so there's more people who can back you up. It's not so you can just cathartically let it out. It's a nice byproduct of it. But it's junk food unless you actually are using it for a purpose. I can't tell you the amount of times in life that I've had a friend come to me with a story of a partner that was shitty, that was violent, that was, you know, insert string of stuff here. Certainly enough that if true, if that person had documented it, taken that step, could have gotten that person put away, could have prevented what was about to come. And then I ask, like, okay, you've been documenting stuff, right? Like, what do you have? Like, you have, like, that would be on your camera, that would be here, that would be there. There's paths to the documentation, and the answer is always, well, no. You kind of need that. Well, I can say it. Yeah, you can. And it doesn't mean anything unless it's somehow documented with some sort of evidence. At the very least, dates and times and descriptions. That's something. That is something. And it's incredibly powerful because it shows you put the effort in. And courts look for that. They also look for people who are just flailing their arms and going, ah! Those are the folks who are usually part of the chaos. Not the ones trying to actively prevent the chaos. And they can see through both. So yes, document. If it's bad, contact a domestic violence advocate before you call police. They know how to navigate the system. They'll actually help. What might backfire? Well, doing nothing. Vary your routine. Stalkers rely on predictability. Make yourself harder to track and trust your instincts over reasonable explanations. If something feels wrong, it is. The National Domestic Violence Hotline is 800-799-7233. It's a starting point. It's not your solution. If you're like, I don't know what to do, start there. Is it going to fix everything? No. But it's a hell of a lot better than doing nothing and just hoping it goes away and binging another Netflix show, watching another episode of Dateline going, well, at least it's not that bad. Yeah, that's what they said too, until Dateline called. The Stalking Prevention Awareness and Resource Center has resources online. Your local prosecutor's office has victim advocates who can help you understand your options. The systems won't always protect you, but you're not powerless. And asking for help isn't weakness, it's survival. I keep going back to that December 6th, Monique Tepe sitting in that hotel room in Indianapolis, upset about something. We'll never know exactly what she knew or what she was thinking. Maybe she saw something on a camera notification. Maybe someone told her something. Maybe it was just a feeling, the kind of feeling you get when someone who once hurt you is still out there, still watching, still waiting. We'll never know why she didn't sound the alarm. Maybe she thought she could handle it. Maybe she thought it would go away. Maybe she was tired of being afraid and just wanted to live her life. Maybe she told herself that it wasn't that bad yet. Or maybe she knew exactly how bad it was and also knew that the system wouldn't save her anyway. The tragedy of this case isn't just that two people are dead. It's that one of them may have seen it coming and still could not escape. Not because she failed, but because the system designed to protect people like her were never built to stop someone like Michael McKee allegedly was. Someone patient, someone calculated, someone who allegedly waited 8 years across multiple states through new marriage, through two children, until he decided it was time. Monique Tepe did a lot of things right. She left, she divorced him, she rebuilt her life, she found someone who loved her, she had children, she moved forward, and it still wasn't enough. That's not her failure. That's ours. As a society, where we still don't have solutions to these problems, clear ways of calling out these people and stopping them before they take action. I don't have the answer, but I do have options. Your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube or on our Substack. Our Substack is hiddenkillers.substack.com. The link is in the description. I'd love to get your thoughts there on all of this. There's so much to dig into. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or you use it ever, hey, check us out there. Press subscribe on Apple Podcasts and do leave us a review. Helps us a lot, and it lets other folks know that you're finding this reporting valuable. So if you are, please leave us a review. We do greatly appreciate that. And like I said, looking forward to your feedback in the comments section on YouTube and on Substack, the link in the description. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step 4, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the Savings Challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. 5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Rocketmoney.com/cancel.